you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Nicole Tucker. In this episode, I'm speaking with Dr. Warren Swiegel of Allegheny Health Network about the RAI refractory differentiated thyroid cancer treatment armamentarium. Right now, in RAI refractory differentiated thyroid cancer. Dr. Swiegel, can you start by summarizing the treatment options that are available for RAI refractory differentiated thyroid cancer?
You know, out of the vast numbers of papers out there looking at thyroid cancer, only a small set are radioactive iodine refractory. And out of those, usually first-line treatment as designated by the NCCN is really, if you can remove it surgically, remove it surgically. If it's local disease or regional disease, surgery tends to be the first option. If surgery isn't an option, you can always consider external beam radiation in order to slow down disease progression, or other ablative techniques such as alcohol ablation or radiofrequency ablation, all to get rid of that, like I said, either a regional or local disease. However, for disease that is non-resectable or metastatic, where surgery is not an option and radioactive iodine isn't an option, the NCCN will tell you you could consider TSH suppression, just high doses of levothyroxine, and that can slow down disease progression. But then that's where some of the other systemic options become available, things like, lenvatinib as an option.
Can you go into detail on the role of lenvatinib for RAI refractory differentiated thyroid cancer? What are the most recent data showing?
You know, this has been a newer therapy. I can say when I was in med school, I don't think it was around yet, or at least it was being developed. As of right now, for those patients that are radioactive iodine refractory and have differentiated thyroid cancer and have systemic disease, lenvatinib is the kind of preferred or category one level of evidence recommended by the NCCN. This is kind of the first tool in the bag for a lot of medical oncologists. And a lot of that is based on the recent trials, specifically the SELECT trial, which was done a couple of years ago, which was a phase 3 trial, placebo-controlled, where they compared lenvatinib to patients receiving placebo. And it showed that, you know, for younger patients had better progression-free survival, and for older patients, even better overall survival compared with placebo. Now, follow-up studies to that, looking at kind of retrospective use of the drug, have shown similar, somewhat variable progression-free survival compared to that. But again, the results looked like they were just kind of confirmed with the CELECT trial, which was done, I believe, in Japan recently as well.
Can you discuss the promising data shown with cabozantinib in this patient population?
This is really, again, kind of second line when you consider systemic therapies. This is really for patients who have failed either lenvatinib or sorafenib. And again, the COSMIC 311 was really, again, another phase 3 placebo-controlled trial, which looked at patients who have failed that first-line treatment and then were given either cabozantinib or placebo. And again, for those patients, the patients receiving the drug, again, had a better overall progression-free survival than placebo. And so, again, for those who have failed that first line, it is a good second line option.
Thank you, Dr. Swiegel. Now, do you think sorafenib still has a role in this space?
The sense I get is that it's a lot of it is clinician dependent. It's up to the medical oncologist when you dig into which is better, lenvatinib or sorafenib. The studies are very close. There aren't many head-to-head studies. There was recently one that showed that lenvatinib may have a slightly higher progression-free survival rate than sorafenib, but then maybe potentially increased toxicity rates. And so while I think a lot of people feel more comfortable using lenvatinib, I think it still is a little bit of a clinician preference.
So cabozantinib has been granted FDA breakthrough therapy designation for RAI refractory differentiated thyroid cancer. What would be the impact if this drug is able to continue into an FDA approval?
The designation kind of already means it's a promising drug. Usually drugs that don't have a lot of promise or a lot of excitement behind them usually don't get this designation. So already that kind of labels it as, hey, this is the next thing. I think one is that it'll hopefully help speed up the process of an FDA approval. Two, it also does mean there's probably some increased scrutiny around it, but that's a good thing. You know, you want your drugs to be well tested. But it also means that once there is clear FDA approval, I think it may bump it up in that treatment line. Now you're going to start looking at it not as a second line treatment or systemic treatment, but maybe comparing it as a first line treatment or using it in combination with other drugs. And so it kind of just opens the door for it to be used in a wider range of disease in patients.
Thank you, Dr. Spiegel. Can you discuss the safety profile of the TKIs available for this disease?
In general, TKIs are considered, you know, safer than your standard chemotherapy drugs, which can have a lot of significant toxicities. That being said, there are some very key important things you need to think about with regard to TKIs. GI side effects being pretty common, things like diarrhea or GI complaints. Hypertension is very common. Again, sometimes up to 70-75% of patients, depending on the study you read. Things like weight loss, secondary to anorexia, can be seen in a significant portion of patients. And then you can also have some hand, foot, and skin reactions with some of these medications. Again, that can vary with regard to grade. Either, you know, most of these are grade 1, grade 2 toxicities, not terribly serious, that resolve with some dose adjustment, and much less likely to be grade 3 or grade 4. I do also have to say alopecia and mucositis, again, are also possibilities to be aware of as well.
Thank you, Dr. Spiegel. So lastly, what do you think is needed in the RAI refractory differentiated thyroid cancer treatment armamentarium for the future? Looking forward.
Luckily, this is a small portion of patients. Most patients are treated with surgery or radioactive iodine after surgery. And so we are looking at a small portion of patients. That being said, these are often patients who you've done surgery, you've done radioactive iodine, you may have done external beam, you may have tried something else, and have now on their fourth or fifth line treatment, they're still dealing with the disease. Yes, it's not terribly aggressive, or in some cases can be, and you're kind of running out of options. And so that's why all of these new systemic therapies, while they are new, you know, have a lot of excitement and promise. These are patients who have kind of run out of options. And so, you know, a magic bullet is always what we need, but those are always hard to find. And so I think what we really need for radioactive iodine refractory cancer is either a single or combination medicine that can treat that entire range of patients, or something that can, in a sense, turn back the clock and reset that iodine sensitivity. Something that can turn off the refractoriness of these cancers. And I think that's those are the things that I think are coming down the line.